Joseph Arthur and his Technicolor Dreamcast on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Do you remember where you were or when you saw Reservoir Dogs, Quentin Tarantino's first film? It was revolutionary. I remember I was in London, England, I think, and I went to the theater. I saw, you know, Reservoir Dogs, all these signs for it. And I was like, what is this? What is this? And you go in and you see it. It kind of, it's transcendent, some art. It changes you. Certainly Reservoir Dogs was one such film. It was incredible. My next guest has a song that was on the soundtrack of Reservoir Dogs. Sandy Rogers is a country musician known for Fool for Love, which was featured in the 1986 movie of the same name. The song also found its way on the soundtrack for the Quentin Tarantino movie Reservoir Dogs, but wasn't heard in the movie itself. The song was featured again in 1996 for the movie. It was heard in the movie. Sorry. Well, that's what it said here, Sandy. Hold on. Let me finish. The song was featured again in 1996 for the movie Somebody Up There Likes Me. She is the sister of American actor and playwright Sam Shepard. Wow. What did your parents do to make artistic genius kids? She's here with us now. Sandy Rogers, thank you for coming on the show. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks, Joseph. Yeah, no, that review is wrong. It was in the movie. It's like right when Mr. Orange is looking at himself in the mirror. He's getting ready to go to the meeting, you know, and he knows he's been made. He's going to get killed, and he knows it, and the song is right there when he's looking in the mirror. Fool for Love.
What did you think when you saw that movie for the first time, Reservoir Dogs? Well, that scene, remember the scene where they played Stuck in the Middle, where it was like with the cop and the razor blade, and then there was like that long pause where he goes out to the trunk, and it's like, and you hear kids playing off in the distance and inside. I don't know. That movie was mind-blowing. What did you think?
Well, I watched it like about 4 times back to back when it first came out. I just spent the whole day in the theater watching it. And it got better and better every time. Because at first there's so much blood, you know. You got to get used to that. And then you get to appreciate what the artistic part of the whole thing is. Yeah, it was great. It's a great movie. Great movie. I liked it a lot. And, yeah, you know, and great songs. I mean, look at these songs on there. You know, you've got, have you listened to this, to the soundtrack? Because it's a great record. They've got
I don't think I have.
There's a DJ that introduces every song, and he does a great job in that. Some of these, you know, Harvest Moon is just incredible. Stuck in the Middle with You. There's a Nielsen song on here. You know, it's great. Little Green Bag, you know. Great, bunch of songs. I feel
the best directors. The best directors, they knew how to choose music. Martin Scorsese is another one famous for it. Just really like the affinity for music, and like the way Mean Streets uses the Rolling Stones, or Goodfellas was always using like Gimme Shelter or something like that. It would sort of make the film so much better, right?
Well, this is a story too, because when I did the record Fool for Love, the music supervisor was Karen Rackman, and she really liked my music, and so she became the music supervisor for Reservoir Dogs, and that's how that happened, because I wrote about 7 Fools for Love for that movie, and they didn't want any of them. They just kept with Let's Ride, and so it was good for me money-wise, because I retained the whole song, you know. I didn't have to give it up to the movie. And so she placed it in that. She became the music supervisor for Reservoir Dogs and placed it in that movie. And she placed my songs in a bunch of other movies, too. It was great. Great time.
Are you in L.A.? Where do you live?
I live above L.A. I live on the backside of Mount Baldy now, in a little town called Pinyon Hills. It's near Hesperia. And it's desert. I've got a little piece of land out here, and I look at the San Gabriel Mountains every day. It's beautiful.
That's nice. Little I love desert life myself. I'm in Arizona, and I've become accustomed to it. What was your childhood like? I mean, your brother obviously is legendary, Sam Shepard. That's insane. That's amazing. Yeah. And you're amazing. Like, well, how did your parents, what did your parents do to raise artistic kids? And did you have any other siblings? Did they all follow suit?
Well, I've got a sister. So there's three of us, Sam and then me and then my little sister. She's 8 years younger than me, Roxanne, and she does theater. So she's into it too. And me, I didn't come into the music until like I was about 22. You know, I didn't do it as a child. In fact, I resented it because my parents gave me piano lessons instead of giving me a horse for Christmas once. I was so ticked. So I reluctantly took piano lessons as a child, but I didn't get into it at all until I was about 22. So, but Sam was a wonderful brother. You know, he took me everywhere. I was a big old tomboy. You know, I got to play football and baseball and ride bikes with the boys and stuff. It was great. And then all of a sudden, you know, he said, okay, you can't come anymore. But yeah, no, he's a great big brother. Had no idea he would, you know, I still have trouble grappling with what had become of him, you know. He just metamorphosized into Sam Shepard, you know. It was pretty weird. I was in college in Davis when he started out in New York City and started getting that, you know, the following. And finally one of his plays came to Davis, Chicago, so I went and saw it, and it just blew my mind, really, really did, you know. And I kept saying, did you write that? And so, you know, but we have a great relationship. You know, he's gone now, but yeah, we had a great relationship. Yeah. You know, good sister brother thing for sure.
Well, I'm sorry for your loss with that, you know, but it's like there's something so quintessentially American about him. It's an American success story, and sort of just even hearing you retell your childhood just like, you know, has a Norman Rockwell sort of feeling to it. It's like,
we lived in South Pasadena when I was, when we were up until I was 10 and he was 14. That was most of where he was, you know. And then he went to Duarte High for 4 years and took off from there. But he did meet some people at Duarte High that were important to us, to his change, you know, because he went from just a regular kid to something else, you know.
He was. And what do you think? What do you think,
you know,
promoted
the
that or made that happen?
He had all the stuff. What's that? I'm sorry.
What do you think promoted his change, his shift? You're sort of speaking of it in mystical terms in a way, like his transformation. I mean, you know, his name change and his like becoming this incredible American writer. Like, I mean, he's an important American playwright, you know.
I think he was on the trajectory when he left, you know, L.A. and he got on that bus going across the country doing plays and stuff like that. And then when he hit New York, he ran in, you know, he looked up an old friend from Duarte, Charlie Mingus, the son of the jazz guy, and stayed with him and just got immersed in that, you know, that scene there. And he was at the vortex of that, right, you know, with the goods. Turns out, you know, I mean, he just started writing, but he wrote a play before he ever left. It was a really interesting little play that he wrote before he ever got into New York. He wrote it out at Mount San Antonio College. So he was doing stuff. Nobody knew. I didn't know, you know, I didn't have any idea. So, yeah.
And what did your parents do? What did your parents do? Like, what do you think? Where do you think this artistic urge came from?
Well, I have a grandfather. My mother's father was a master painter. He painted at Chicago Art Institute, or he taught at the Chicago Art Institute for years, all his life. And I know that he was, I mean, that's valid art. Then, you know, my mother was not an artist, but she carried the gene, I think. And then we had a lot of writers on my dad's side, you know, newspaper writers. stuff like that. I don't know. I think if it's, some of it is genetic, and some of it is the time he was raised and the trajectory he went when he left L.A. and he went across the country to New York. The timing was perfect. You know, that was the off Broadway scene was just starting. You know, where they'd just get together with six or so people and do a play. You know, it was wonderful.
Yeah. I was just talking with the last guest about this, like the writers, the writers used to be our heroes, you know, like before the internet, that was like Kerouac, the Beats, Bukowski, your brother. I mean, like these were people that we wanted to emulate. And now these days, it doesn't seem to be nearly as powerful an urge for society. I mean, then the writers were the rock stars, really.
Yeah, I don't know. I've got grandkids that are in their 20s now, and I keep feeding them books, you know. But I don't think they read them. You know, I don't know. They've got other things to do, you know. They're busy. I don't know.
Yeah.
We got, because all those writers are still there. All you have to do is pick up a book and read it, you know.
Yeah.
So,
but they're no longer promoted in our culture as these heroic figures as much. I mean, even singer-songwriters, like, and I want to get to that, like how you discovered your own artistic urge and your own abilities in writing right after these words on TNT.
TNT's Kate Shimarani.
Compulsory house purchase to make way for the immigrants that are coming. So is that going to be David Beckham's house? Is that going to be Gary Lineker's house? Is that going to be some MP's houses? What about that big house that Zelensky with his khaki gear, you know, 45,000 khaki t-shirts and matching cargo pants, not a bullet hole or shrapnel hole in any of them. Has he purchased Highgrove, 20, whatever it was, 20 million? Are they going to be using all those? What about all those rooms in Buckingham Palace or everywhere else? No, they're probably going to rob the elderly of their homes. So people out there, British people, an Englishman's home is his castle. Are you going to get off your knees yet? I know you're all going down the gym and pumping iron. What's that all about with your tats and your turkey teeth? We need real people to stand up to this.
Kate Shimarani on today's News Talk, TNT. A better business tip from TNT Radio. One reason people tune in to TNT Radio is often because they're loyal to a specific show or personality. Our personalities have been a part of people's daily routine, and people continue to tune in. They trust TNT Radio and are highly engaged with the content. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live.
Turn on Alexa and ask her to play
TNT.
Turning on anything else usually requires dinner and conversation, dressing up and brushing your teeth. And I'm already tired.
This is today's News Talk, TNT.
And we're back with Sandy Rogers. Country musician is what it says, singer-songwriter. Sandy, did your brother's success or his sort of journey into becoming an artist inspire your own? Did you see that he could do it, so why not you?
I was never on a journey to do anything. Music has always been kind of a hobby for me. My brother's success and his whole thing is a huge inspiration for me. Yes, and he totally encouraged my music. You know, he was very, very helpful with that. And in fact, you know, the record, you know, when he was working with Altman, he had a cassette tape of me from, you know, a few years before, and played it for Altman, and so got me that job doing that. You know, Altman flew me out there and to New Mexico, and then he said, "Oh, you could do all the songs." You know, "Oh, cool, all right." So that was great. That was the start of everything. But I never really wanted a career that way. You know, it's too shaky, and I've been on the road, and you don't make any money, really, or not at that stage. You know, you have to get really top notch to be making any money. So it's not a money thing. So I had to have money. So I had to have a job. And music was just a mm-hmm. side thing, you know. Now,
yeah, however, but if people make it big, they make tons of money.
So I'm trying. They do, but I had no aspirations to make anything big. You've got to do a lot to do that. You can't just fall into that, you know.
So, why is your attitude about it so casual? Like when you say you resist saying that you're on any kind of journey, or like, you know what I mean? Like, what do you mean you're not on it? Aren't we all on a journey? I feel like even this radio interview is a journey. Yeah. Everything's a journey. What's not a journey, Sandy? Come on.
Well, it was money. It wasn't a money making thing, and so I had to put it aside because I had to work. And when you get jobs and stuff, you don't have as much time as you used to have to do artistic things. So it kind of got put to the side many times, you know, as I was moving through life. But now I am totally free. You know, I have my pension and I live on the desert. And we just had a funeral for Paul Lax here in L.A., you know, I don't know if you know the band Icy Hawks in L.A., but he was this wonderful guitar player, musician, person. And so that was another big reason why I moved down here, because we were working on a record together. And he just passed away in January, so we had this big celebration for him last night. Adios, Paul. And so I want to do something down here musically. You know, I want to get into the L.A. scene somehow. You know, maybe theater. I don't know. Music theater, you know, not music theater, but music in theater. You know, I don't know. We'll see. Mm. I've got plenty
of time. So you have, it sounds like you have more ambitions in a way than ever, more career ambitions towards music.
Well, now I don't have to work, see? So I have the time to devote to the music properly, you know. And that's pretty much what I think I'm going to do, as long as my voice and everything lasts, you know. I'm 76 now, see. So things change. Although Nick
Better than ever.
Says that your vocal cords never age. You know who Nick Gravanitis is, right?
No.
Blues guy. He wrote Born in Chicago. Yeah.
Oh, okay. He was with
Michael Bluefield.
You brought up Altman, Robert Altman. That's one of the most interesting filmmakers of all time, really. I mean, his like style of having like conversations going on and no sort of clear line of dialogue, but just sort of randomness. What was that guy like?
Oh, I didn't like him. No, he's stuffy and never mind. No. I didn't like him. And he kind of screwed Sam on that movie, because Sam was supposed to have the last say on all the cuts and stuff. And he took the editing part to France. He did it in France. Well, Sam's not going to go over there, you know. So I was influenced by Sam's opinion of him too, you know. But no, I thought he was a jerk. Sorry.
What? No, that's okay. He's just an interesting artist. I mean, he did MASH, right? The film MASH and The Player, I think.
Well, Nashville.
And like those.
Nashville is like one of my favorite movies. It's a great movie.
Yeah, Nashville.
Yeah.
He's an incredible artist. I mean, you know, they don't make them like that anymore. Like your brother's era, Robert Altman, these type of like classic people, even, you know. What do you think of the modern world? Are you concerned with the state of the world? What do you think the role of singer-songwriters are these days?
Well, everything is, you know, I have friends that are singer-songwriters that are on the road. I mean, they're actually doing it, you know. And there's very little money, of course. And but they're so devoted, and it's real music, you know. If you go out and see live music, please go see original music, you know. I mean, it's just unbelievable. Last night we did 2.5 hours of songs that Paul and his buddies everywhere in the world had written together, and everybody, just beautiful music, you know. And So I think there's definitely a place for it. There's a huge bunch of kids that follow festivals and stuff, you know. Following festivals is really fun. I did a little bit, but, you know. You really hang out, you know, you hang out with people all night long and then take a nap and then get up and go for some more, you know. It's great.
So you said you were making a record with Paul, and so did you finish the record? I mean, are you still deep in the process?
No. Well, we had 6 songs cut, basics, and then 4 of those Paul had added some things to. So I got 4 that I can work with, you know, pretty much the way they are. And then we've got to add some to the other 2. And then I've got 4 more songs I got to get together. So, but everybody's on board. We're just waiting. His wife is the drummer. And so Victoria's got to recover before she's going to want to get involved in something like that, I think. But she was a friend, so we'll see. But I don't want to pressure her, you know. So I'm just waiting. And I've got work to do. You know, I've got 4 songs I've got to get together, new ones to do. And what do I want to do on the rest of the ones? You know, I've got to do some study. I've been moving in, you know, to this house in November.
What's your process like? I mean, do you wake up in the early morning and start writing? How do you do it? And how often are you spending making music? Is it just like little stabs of inspiration, or is it something that you like sort of slave over all day long?
Well, I'm a writer. I mean, I call myself a writer. I call myself all these things, but I'm a writer, maybe not a very good one, but so I write in all kinds of ways. And so I'm constantly going to my notebook and writing stuff down, you know. That's a constant on and off all day long. Some of that works into songs, some of it works into this poetry books that I make, and you know, and I also dabble in a little bit of art. So I have on my website, which is rattlerecords.com, I'm plugging.
Do it, plug.
I've got a little book called Anti-Grace there that's got some of my art and my poetry in there. It's kind of a neat little book. And I'm working on another one. I've got enough to, I just have to organize it and get it together. But, so as far as the writing, it's sitting down and like having a schedule. No, I'm not a schedule person. I just usually get up. There's a lot of chores I have to do. I have dogs. My horses are coming in a couple of weeks, so, you know, there'll be a lot of stuff to do. And then I try to do my Qigong in the morning, you know, after breakfast, and get that relaxation going. And then I have chores, you know. I got to water and stuff like that. But every day I will write something somewhere. And every day I will sit down with my guitar at some point and do something. Either, you know, I'm doing these singer-songwriter things on Thursday nights in South Pasadena at this little place called the Jeweled Universe. And so I get 2 songs for those nights. And so I'll work on those, on a couple new songs, you know. I mean, not new songs, but, you know, from my portfolio. I've got 3 records, so. And I'm working on the 4th one, so I've got plenty of songs, you know. And some of them I haven't done in so long, and some of them I don't do anymore. Like, I don't do Go Rosa, which is so racist, you know. I'm not doing that one. And
hey,
some
so Sandy, can you do a song for us now?
Sure, what would you like to hear?
What do you got for us? Anything you want to play?
Let's see, what can I do? Oh, this is so much nicer without the video. You know? I don't have to worry about anything but just talking. God, it's such good music last night. Some of the best players in all of LA were there. Okay, let's see what would be a good one to do. I think I'm going to do it comes and goes. Your friend Kim reminded me of this song. It's a little
Kim, the producer of the show. Shout out, Kim.
No, yeah. She said this was her favorite song, and I haven't played it in years, so I went and looked it up. I couldn't even find the words to it. It wasn't in my computer, so I had to go listen to the record and write them down, like the old days, you know, to get the words so I could practice. There's a nighttime rose, two faces use the same eyes. Oh, the feeling grows. Cold hands are the perfect size, so the blind fools roam. See the same signs they don't recognize. Every one of them knows. He comes and goes. He comes and goes. As the daytime waits for wheels without a road, and in the time it takes for the eyes to melt the snow. Some call it love, some call it hate, some call it motel home. Every one of them knows. It comes and goes. It comes and goes. And you're sorry, oh, you're sorry you were ever born. And you're sorry, oh, so sorry, the truth was ever told. Now everybody knows it comes and goes. Comes and goes. It comes and it goes. It comes and it goes. Everybody knows. Okay. Did that come through?
All right. It comes and it goes, as Sandy Rogers. So what did you mean by that? It comes and it goes. What's that? What inspired that song?
Oh, my God. It comes, it goes. Well, I was writing it for the movie. It's in Fool for Love. And there's a scene where they put it. I don't know when I was writing for that scene, but I can't remember what inspired this, really. Mm. But I know it was part of the movie because I've got some call a motel home, so I was doing that, you know, because the movie's in the motel.
So, well, it's general enough, isn't it? It could be, you could extrapolate many meanings to it. It comes, it goes. It could be about love. It could be about money. It could be about life itself.
Well, I think that's the meaning. It's not a particular thing, but it's just that things are right and then things are wrong, you know? Everything's just fine and then it's not, you know? It's crazy. It's life, you know?
How do you deal with that? How do you deal personally when things seem to go pear-shaped or when everything's right and then everything's not? Where do you go when things are not right?
I get as busy as possible. I tend to like run. You know? Yeah, no, I just do as much stuff as I can, you know, keep busy. I don't sit around, you know, moping or anything. But
do you pray?
It's getting harder, you know, the older you get, that's harder to keep going, you know, to keep yourself moving physically. I mean, physical movement, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I read, I like to read, and I, you know, I like to play music and listen to music. And I got my dogs, and I've got two horses coming. I've got my horses I haven't seen for, or my one horse I haven't seen for almost 2 years. And then my other guy, I just bought him, and he's down in Lake Elsinore, and he's going to be fun. So anyway, they're coming in a couple weeks. I had to put a fence up and a shelter up and stuff. So that'll be great. And I can walk out my gate with my horse and go out into the open desert. This has been a dream.
That sounds very, it sounds like one of your brother's plays, to be honest. You know,
it's just like, whole family, we all love the desert. We all love the desert. You know, in L.A., we'd go out to the desert. My dad bought a little parcel at one point in time, and we'd go out there and sit in chairs and sit on the parcel. You know, he got ripped off, though. Everybody did. The guy ran away with the money, so he never developed it.
Huh.
Yeah.
All right, well, let me take a quick break. We'll be right back after these words on TNT.
While serving in Vietnam, a grenade took my ability to see. Today, I'm a sculptor, creating new visions. Now, my fingers are my eyes. As a veteran, I know the challenges of life can be great. In my art, turning a lump of clay into something beautiful, that means a lot to me. Life is like that. We each must use what we can to make things better.
DAV helps veterans like Michael get the benefits they've earned. They help more than 1 million veterans every year in life-changing ways.
Now, I show others how they can create something with their own hands. With support from DAV, more veterans can shape their lives into a thing of beauty. My victory is bringing beauty into the world.
Michael Naranjo, may your victories inspire many more. Support more victories for veterans. Go to DAV.org.
Not see it coming. It's pre-diabetes, and it captures 1 in 3 adults. But you can escape. Take the 1-minute pre-diabetes risk test to know where you stand and prevent or delay type 2 diabetes. Be your own hero on smartphones everywhere at doihaveprediabetes.org.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT, with Joseph Arthur and his Technicolor Dreamcast.
And we're back with singer-songwriter Sandy Rogers. Sandy, do you identify as a country artist or just as an artist?
I think I'm country blues. I think I'm country blues. You know, if you got to put a label on it. But it's also folky, you know. It's, I don't know, you know, because I don't really write like the country writers do, but I love some of those country hooks, you know?
Yeah. But it's become very popular these days, is country music.
It is?
Yeah, it's really popular. I was watching a country artist the other day, and I was like thinking, it was like, it occurred to me that there's a masculine energy towards country music. Like, dudes can sing emotional country songs, and it has this masculine sort of tough guy vibe, but it's still them being emotional. Whereas like folky singer-songwriters, if they get emotional, it's more sort of feminine energy. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I see what you're saying. Yeah. Well, when I get emotional, I feel like I'm rock and roll, you know? To me, rock and roll is the emotional music, you know? That you've got to have so much emotion to pull off rock and roll, you know. That
why?
I mean, when I'm going like this, I'm rocking, you know. I'm not bluesing. I'm not, well, maybe bluesing too. I don't. But yeah. It's not, I'm not country in those kinds of ways, but it's really country blues. I mean, I think one of my songs that I might do today, I'll show you. I'll talk if I do that song. Listen, you can do. Yeah.
You got one you want to do?
Yeah.
Do it.
Sure. Yeah. And this is what I call like a country blues. Regular blues goes to the four. You know, goes from the one to the mm-hmm. four, and to me, a country blues goes from the one to the five, and it's
right.
Let me make sure. Here.
Yeah, for those that don't know, one to four means, you know, A B C D E F G. So if it's like A B C D, so A, if you're playing in the key of A, it would be A B C D is the four, right? Yeah, and then the five would be E. There you go. It's the alphabet. It's basic.
Okay, now this is a bluesy tune, but it's not the 1-4-5. But it's the 1-5 something. Here I go somewhere. People call lax. Here I go somewhere.
Where'd you learn to sing like that, Sandy? That's beautiful.
You know, the singing, and you know, I never sing the same song the same way. the singing just comes out, didn't it? And it started Olan. Do you know who Olan is? My brother's first wife, Olan. She was my best buddy for, you know, like a long, long time. Anyway. We were visiting Sam in Nova Scotia when he was up there, and Olan is a musician and singer and stuff, and she was sitting down at the piano, and this was like, I think I was about 22 years old, And I, for some reason, just started singing with her. You know, the music was out there, the words were out there and stuff. And she just went, oh, my God, Sandy, you know. And so she's the one who just totally encouraged me. And we put a band together and everything. And then I ended up moving down there. We had a band. We'd go and play parties in San Francisco. We had, I think we knew about four songs, and we'd play them over and over and over again. Anyway, and that got me started. And then Sam was very encouraged.
What was the band called?
Sway, S-W-A-Y, Sway. It was
great
me and
name.
Her and a
Rolling Stones.
And a guy that had a great voice. Well, she came up with that. You know, she's brilliant. She's in L.A.
That
she
is brilliant.
In L.A.
You know, I T-Bone Burnett produced one of my records, and he would bring up your brother a lot, Sam Shepard. I wonder if you've ever encountered T-Bone Burnett.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We've had dinner and... Yeah, he was at Sam's funeral and stuff. Yeah. No, I know him. In fact, he sent me a little note. He listened to my Green Moon, and he really liked it. You know, he gave me nice compliment stuff. But I haven't ever worked with him or anything. Just
that would be a good match, you know? Like, I don't know if you ever... Well, he produced one of my records, and also he introduced me to Jim Keltner. Like, I would think Jim Keltner would be a great drummer for you as well, if you've ever encountered Keltner.
I know that name, too. Yeah.
Huh. One of the greatest session drummers of all time.
I haven't thought about T-Bone because he's so high class, you know? Because I just...
So are you, Sandy.
I really don't like the idea of a big production. I really don't, you know.
Yeah.
I'm still trying to get the essence of me when there's a band. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm still trying.
How do you get the essence? How do you go for the essence?
Well, you have to be the strongest one, you know. You have to be the strongest one. And it's very difficult to do when you've got really good musicians with you, you know. But you do it almost physically. You know, it's almost, here's where we're going. You have to control the situation, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And if I were a better guitar player or a better keyboard player, I'd be able to do that. I have to do it with my voice. I have to do it with the song, you know. I can't let it go away from me, you know. And that's what I'm looking forward to in this next step, because I have the time now where I can, you know, and I have the confidence that I didn't used to have, that I can lead a band, you know. I can lead a band, and they can follow me, you know, to be just fine.
Are you surprised that the journey of life, even though I know you said you weren't on any kind of journey, but the sort of... Yeah, earlier you did say music wasn't a journey, but you've been on some trajectory, and what you just mentioned is that you got more time, you have more confidence. I mean, what comes to mind is Andy Warhol giving singer-songwriters a hard time for only putting out one record every year. He would say, you should be writing 10 songs a day. What's this 10 songs in a year? For you, there's been sometimes 10 years between records. So you've taken the Andy Warhol thing. Like, Andy Warhol would really beat you up. But now you have more time and you have more strength, I guess. Are you surprised that you've kept evolving into this place?
Yeah. Well, this is my dream. I mean, this is the end of the road, you know. This is where I just exactly want it to be, you know, at this point in my life. Would have been nice to have my husband with me, but... Other than that, it's good.
I'm sorry you lost your husband.
Me too.
But, you know, he's probably with you in more ways than one, and he's probably inspiring you to keep singing and to keep pushing forward, right?
Oh, yeah. No, he's happening. He's happening. But, yeah, This is a good spot. I have to get used to it. I have to get, I've been on a trajectory for 2 years, fast moving and moving. You know, I moved from Northern California to Idaho and then back down to here. a lot of physical stuff, you know, and just keeping myself going. And now I have some time and I can relax a little bit and get into this thing. And you're talking about a schedule, you know, I could actually write all day long, you know, write and play and sing. I mean, I have the time to do that. Whether I will, we'll see. But I can't push myself either. You know, I don't write songs. They have to, the seed, it's like a seed. It germinates for me. Unless, every once in a while, I'll write a song, boom, it comes right out, you know. But I bet it's been sitting inside for a while, you know. But most of my songs, there's a seed, and I have little bits and pieces of paper all over the place, and I put them all together, kind of, you know. You know how David Bowie used to write songs? He would put put them in a hat.
Yeah.
And then pull the pieces out.
The cut-up technique. Yeah, he got that from Burroughs, I think. William Burroughs, actually, was the originator of that. Yeah, the cut-up technique.
It's pretty cool.
You bring up Bowie.
I used to do it with my third graders. You know, you try doing that with sentences with third graders. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. Well, you bring up Bowie. Who are some of your other influences? I mean, I hear Dylan in what you do as well. Were you big influenced by Bob Dylan?
Big Bob Dylan, yeah, big Bob Dylan. But my favorite singer is Jerry Lee Lewis. You know, he's got the voice of all time, as far as I'm concerned. Yeah, Jerry Lee Lewis.
Why? What is it about his voice to you resonates the most?
He can growl and he can be just as sweet as can be. But he's got that power that the rock and roll has, you know. He just, and listen to his voice. Just get a Jerry Lee Lewis record and listen. And he's got blues, he's got jazz, he's got everything in that voice, country. Everything is in there. He's just, and he's got a range. He can do anything he wants with his voice. Just like he could with the piano, you know. But he's my favorite.
What a controversial figure, though, right? I mean, he married his cousin or something at 13-ish. Like, that's a bit wild, really, right?
Well, he was probably a little crazy, I think. But he was into music, like, since age 10. I mean, I think he was performing when he was, like, 12 or 13 or 14, making money, you know, all over the South down there, and all his cousins too. They all had, but he was supposed to be going to church, you know. And so he had all these conflicts, you know, with everything. And yeah, he was a bit wild. He was a bit wild. And I met him actually, and in West Sacramento, I was a waitress, and he was playing, and I was. These kids had these T-shirts, and they gave him some T-shirts that they'd made for him. And then at the end of the concert, he said to the kids, he says, come on back, you know, to my room, you guys. And so I scurried right on over there and got with those kids and went back to his room. And he's sitting at the piano with no shirt on, you know, playing the piano. He's got a couple of big, you know, guards there and a couple cute little gals. And he just started talking and drinking and talking and drinking and playing the piano. It was great. It was really great.
Wow.
But it didn't end great. But anyway.
Oh, yeah.
No, he. Yeah, he. Yeah, yeah. No, I don't need to tell that story on the radio.
All right. Well, anyway, we're out of time. Sandy, tell people where to find you. And thank you so much for coming on, especially. And I'm so sorry that your guitar player passed away. And your husband as well.
Yeah. Well, I'll get over everything, you know. You just keep going.
Yeah.
Just keep on going. Okay, well, thanks for calling. And Kim was great.
Thanks.
It was fun. We had a good time.
All right. Well, Sandy Rogers, thank you for coming on. Do you have like a social media account? Oh, she hung up. All right. Well, that was Sandy Rogers.
I just have my website. Just the website, rattlerecords.com.
Rattlerecords.com. Keep listening to TNT, everybody. We'll be back.